I just started saying this joke where I say I'm Donald Glover if he dated black women. Everybody loves that joke. Everybody loves it. Because one, it took me all this time in comedy to come up with that. One, and two, he just recently wrote on a thing. I don't know if you've been watching New Atlanta. He wrote on a in an interview, "Am I afraid of black women?" Beautiful.
So it's topical and it's
rooted in truth. It's based.
Yeah. And yeah, and your outward appearance is also topical.
Exactly. And people have been like, you should talk about how you look like Donald Glover. Easy. It just sets the tone right there. And then I can go in and talk about that shit.
That's a good opener.
That is a good opener. Oh, I did that in front of an all-black crowd, and it fucking did very well. Wow. So it works. And then I start talking about me liking black women and what it's like, which is some funny shit.
But, yeah, you know, man. I honestly, like I said, when I was very young, I remember being in an all white neighborhood and, you know, one brown girl moved in. She was Ecuadorian.
Okay.
And I remember like in the fourth grade, being like, oh, this one's like me. This one's for me. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
It's kind of like
this should work. This is supposed to work.
And this is the crazy part about it is culturally, there was no reason for me to think that because I grew up in Wyoming and I grew up around white people. So there's no reason, and I, you know, dated white girls, right?
Yeah, but at home, it was very Mexican, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess I think genetically, maybe culturally, subconsciously, I have always been more attractive to brown women.
Fuck yeah, that's real.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So yeah, I mean that's the same thing, you know, as opposed, you know, like with my wife and everything. So I've always just been attracted to that. It's like natural. It's not even like, you know, I grew up, you know, Catholic, thinking homosexuality was wrong and never being exposed to that until I met, you know, one of my brother's friends, he was gay. And, you know, I don't know how the conversation came up, but one thing he said to me, he's like, okay, it's like, what part of a woman are you attracted to? I'm like, ah, the butt. He's like, okay, when you look at a woman's butt, you're immediately attracted to that, right? I'm like, yeah. He's like, now when you look at a man's butt, you're not attracted to that. I'm like, no. And he's like, okay, that's the same way I feel opposite. And I was like, there's nothing that was ever taught. It just, that's what I'm attracted to. I was like, oh, man, that explained it the best to me ever. It's just, it's deep down you, that's what you're attracted to. And that makes sense to me.
I just threw up. No, I'm just playing. but that's some real shit. It's like, there's no choice. You don't have a choice. Yeah.
You don't have a choice. And, you know... Yeah, I think that's crazy. It's like, I feel like it's nature, genetically nature. It's like, hey, this is what's gonna do, you know?
Yeah.
And I have a big old son. I need a woman that can handle that. And those narrow hips ain't gonna do it for my kids.
I mean, there's a many reasons. There's probably practical reasons behind the, you know, the just overall humanistic animalistic drive, you know, for some of the things that we do and why we're attracted to the certain women we are, and we just know them on a instinctual thing, and it's like doesn't need to be explained, but I do wonder about that, just the type of stuff and the reasons why that determines the way I live my life in a lot of ways, what kind of women I'm attracted to and or how I dress and how I'm presenting myself and all this type of stuff.
Yeah, you're like a peacock going specifically for one type of bird.
And then we're talking super simple, but like, okay, you like brown women. There's a whole bunch of types of brown women. I like black women. There's a whole bunch of types of black
women.
That's
true.
If you like white women, there's a whole bunch of, like, there's a whole bunch of types of each one of these, you know? Yeah. So just like, wow, it's like, it still is like, yeah, it's a slimming identifying, you know, category, but not really that much, you know. It's all these little nuances within that.
That's right.
So it's really cool. I like asking people shit like that. Not to put people on their toes about racism or anything like that.
That's more right. Like, and across the racism, not many people are attracted to big women. Oh, I should have said that. that's terrible, but it's true.
I mean, I think more are attracted to it than we realize.
I think some people are. Yeah, I think.
Hey, do you like big girls? You the same answer. No, if I said, have you ever dated one? The same answer that you just said. I have a specific thing about dating, but been with. Yes, right. And so many dudes will say, yeah, I fucked one. Blah blah blah, and say whatever, however it was, or try and say the head was good or whatever. But nah, that shit was kind of fire. Whatever the fuck happened. I don't know what to explain why, but I liked all that shit. So whatever.
And honestly, like in the grand scheme of things, like I guess the women I've dated have always been bigger. Mm-hmm. Because I like a butt. I like.
Come on,
a booty.
Man. Come on, I ain't gonna stunt, man. I ain't gonna stunt. Like that should be looking a little good. That should be looking good. I like it's just
a little bit.
A little bit. It does something to my mind. I don't know what, but like
here's something else. Like I have never understood this. Like what people are like, oh, cellulite's gross. I'm like, that means that doesn't even bother me. You know what I'm saying? Like man. There's a level to it. Everything has a it's whatever that curve is where it's like everything's perfect, it gets to the highest point and then it's downhill from there. You know what I'm saying?
Honestly, like if there's lines that we are attracted to, that there's like different types of big girls. Like if you got, I'm gonna just say it. If you got the fat titties, but then it goes in at your waist and then it goes back out at your, like at a skinny at some point, and then it goes back out at your stomach and then booty, you got curves.
Exactly.
You got curves and they are bigger. Yeah, but they're awesome still.
But if your belly is a shelf for your titties, come on.
Exactly. Now some people that like that though too.
Yeah.
And it more power to them. I'm not knocking that. I'm not here to say what's right or wrong about what people are attracted
that's
to.
Right. And you know what? That's a great point. Like no one should have the right to say what's attractive and what's not.
Thank you.
You can only say what's attractive to you.
Thank you.
And like, they're like, oh, this is attractive. That's unattractive. Like, that's not true. There's some dude in the world who loves that.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. And then if you talk to big girls and they say who the fuck they're fucking a lot of different dudes. And some of them are in shape. Some of them are not. Guys are fucking big girls. And whether they want to fucking walk around, like whether they want to walk around and show them off, because of whatever society standards are, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
You know, because their friends are going to say some shit. That's a whole other thing. You know, that's a whole nother. Yeah.
Yeah. That's another thing, too, that no one ever talks about. It's society saying what's unattractive makes people embarrassed about what they're attracted to. So the fact that guy, or whatever, that fit dude doesn't want to bring that girl out because he's embarrassed. It's not because he's embarrassed of what he's attracted to. He's embarrassed of what society says is unattractive.
Yes.
So that makes him go, oh, I'm this. I shouldn't be dating this.
Yes.
And it's a social scripts and roles that we all play. Like, I feel like that's always, you know, it's been a beautiful life being a 5 on a scale of 1 to 10. I know I'm a 5, but if you're a 10, there's no going up from there. You kind of get too down, and anything less than that, they're like, why is she with him? Oh, she's with him for money. You know what I'm saying? You get judged by being out of your scale. But as a 5, I get a wider range because I can go up 2, down 2. And, you know, and of course, you know, I knocked out of the park with my wife. I got a 10, but, you know.
I mean, you still can do that. You still can swing for the fences. And,
exactly.
And get that. But you can add on armor. That's why men can upgrade. It's so fucked up. Men can, like, go and learn karate or get a motorcycle or work out or get money. And that will that's like up armor. So, like, be funny, you know? It's a lot to it. That's why I like when I see a dude that a bunch of girls are liking, or they're all the attention's on him. And he's like, first off, if he's depending on what he's like, he could be a dude that's subdued and shy, or a dude that's extroverted, right? And I'm like, what the fuck do you bitches like about this dude? What the fuck?
That's what I said about Pete Davidson. And my children go, well, he's not attractive. He's ugly cute. And the fact that there's a term called ugly cute for women, that's
When you hear whatever the reason is, he seems fun. When I ask girls why, they shrug their shoulders. They say, I don't know. He is just hot. He is just cute. He's doing it for me right now. And it's like, cool.
Post Malone, I love his music, but that is an unattractive individual. And women, they're like, oh, he's so hot. It's like, no, he's not. I don't know what it is. He looks like he smells like when you accidentally leave Burger King in your car.
He looks like he wipes his shirt off and there's Cheeto dust on his shirt now. He looks like he sucks Doritos dust off of other people's fingers.
He looks like he's bought one toothbrush in his life.
He looks like he opens up the laundry and checks the drawer for doo-doo stains. And if it's not too dark, he still puts them on.
he looks like he puts on new clothes without bathing.
Yes.
Why did this become the roast of Post Malone?
We just went in on him so hard. It's fire. Well,
I love Post Malone. He is fucking. I'll tell you, I am 100% fangirl for his music. I really am impressed. I don't know why I love it so much.
No, he's fire.
It is fire. Your kids like it too? I'm an old fogey. Yes, my kids like it.
So that's good. Something that's so great when it's something that you two can bond over and it's popping. It's good. First off, somebody's a star when fucking kids and parents can sit and jam to your shit.
Yes.
You're a star, bro.
That's true.
Yeah, dude. You have moved along. First off, that style of music is branched off into what you grew up listening to. It's like not right. And then it came full circle and your kids not like it. So like he is generationally bending, which is fucking sick, dude. It's just good.
Yes. And to me, he also melds that like, cause I don't listen to R&B. It's something that I just don't like.
Okay. But it's folk. It's folk music, but that's what,
folk, but he's a little bit of like, he's not a great singer, but he's singing to it. It's kind of like that what we talked about, that one person that sings that Changes song. And you can have an ugly voice and it works perfectly.
Axl Rose
from Guns N' Roses is a great example. His voice is fucking terrible, but it just works. I think he just has one of those voices to me that just works in music. And he puts it in the right key to make his voice great in every song. And
Bill Withers was a folk artist, man, but they changed to R&B.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of that because it's like, wait, this could be just a grandma's hands. That's
what I love, dude. I love that folky, like it's all emotions, like where you just feel it. They're like in the chords, in the voice, there's sadness and there's turmoil and there's everything. And I gravitate towards that hurt sound versus that pop happiness. I like the minor keys. I don't like the major keys.
Man, that's a fucking chords. We just got super deep into the shit right now.
You know what? Before we get any further, welcome to Redeeming Qualities, not the podcast and not how men speak, but how friends speak. And I'm joined today with Mark.
Hey, what's up?
All right. That's out of the way. Man, I keep forgetting that lately just because we just get right into it.
Yeah, we get to chopping it up. I like that we do that. I don't have a problem with that at all.
Oh, no, man. Oh, man. And the fact that we started with a Post Malone roast makes me very happy. I was like, I'm going to do one. See if Mark's ready to do it.
swinging.
Cheeto dust. I love it.
Yeah.
I love how we each gave our very bougie reference of what dirty is to us.
Yes.
I was terrible. He puts on new clothes without taking a shower. That to me is
that's nasty.
It's nasty, right?
You gonna ruin this shit? You know, also though, I watched this documentary with Juice WRLD, right? A Juice WRLD documentary. I don't know. Your kids probably know Juice WRLD.
Oh my god, dude! I found out about Juice WRLD after he was dead. That's to me.
So Juice WRLD went to the high school right down the street from the high school mine is, right? It was in the district, okay? Not in the district, but in the township, kind of. Okay, regardless, close as shit. So that, first off, it was suburby-esque. There was some kids that, first off, where that school was, it was like it was predominantly black kids, some white kids, but mostly black, but money. It was Homewood Floss More. You ever heard of somebody saying they're flossing? Floss. Yes. So it was a bunch of kids with money that did happen to listen to emo and rock music and punk type shit, and like also listen to hip hop. So like him melding those two things makes perfect sense culturally from exactly where the fuck he's coming from, and being able to freestyle, but then freestyle over fucking like chords of from fucking, you know, some punk band or emo band makes perfect sense. Okay, now to circle it back to him just fucking straight up being a fiend, he would have Montclair or fucking Louis V or, you know what I'm saying, Saint Laurent. And these are just like super high fashion brands. And then be musty as shit, just fucking blacked out, did a bunch of drugs, and then get up, put all this shit on, fresh as shit, like complete, like, and it still looked bummy. Put on the nicest, coolest clothes that are fucking thousands of dollars, and then go on perform dirty as shit. And I was like, you're a fiend, you're a rich fiend, bro.
Which is funny, because you know what, you make a great point. He's frumpy. He just, like, he could put on a shirt that, like, what on another person, like, oh, that looks good on you. He puts it on, he really isn't taking care of himself.
When they showed his body, he had no shirt on sometimes, and he was only 26, 27. I don't even think he got to 30. He was
like 24.
Exactly, dude.
Like when so he came young. Out. Yeah. I mean, he was out with stuff before, but when he, I guess, blew up.
Yeah.
He's like 24. Yeah. So,
dude, he had a party body, but also drinking that syrup, that promethazine shit, that codeine, fucking popping them pills. Like, that's such another kind of high. And it was just. It was just sad to watch and dirty.
It's a trailer park high. I mean, it doesn't cost a lot of money. It's kind of, I don't want to say there's a classy high or a non-classy high, but I mean, we know there is.
I mean, he had the, so he was popping. This is an interesting conversation. I mean, just straight cough syrup, that's some fucking trailer park. Robo tripping, that's some low shit. But cocaine and promethazine, I mean, sorry, promethazine and like perks and Oxycontin, I mean, I guess that's trailer park because it's an epidemic that's across white trash America now. I'm sorry to say that. I don't mean it in a negative way, but just it's not rich people that are having this fucking opioid epidemic, you know?
I mean, if we really want to break down the numbers, I mean, like 60% of America is, you know, white. And how many of those, you know, if you take that percentage, you know, 330, that's like 180 million white people. There's more poor white people than there is. I mean, but the level of destitute in some of the, you know, the black communities is different.
No. What you're saying, you were on the right path. You didn't have to bring up black people. Yeah.
But like to say that, no, I don't. I'm just saying, like, if you take it to different things, there is very, very poor white areas, and there's more of it. So the fact of it is this is saying something's like, you know, white trashy high. It's gonna be a bigger epidemic, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, it's the ability, if it's popular, the ability for it to be gone around.
I'm just saying if it affects one demographic and it's the largest demographic, it's gonna always be a bigger epidemic.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that's true.
Well, you know what's funny though is it's so weird that certain drugs are pinpointed to different races. Like, for example, like South American and Mexican and all this stuff. It's like Colombian. It's like, you know, and where all the drugs are coming through. Like, cocaine is very Latin America. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Like, when you think about it, like what, you know, that's going to be that demographic. But, you know, obviously crack became synonymous with black people in the 80s.
Yes.
And then, like, I think weed is one of those multi-boundary. Everyone smokes weed,
and it's not damaging.
It's not. No, I'm not even gonna say. It's like saying alcohol. I don't even want to list weed as one of the drugs. You know what I'm saying? But now the thing too, like the opioid epidemic, that's also anybody with health care. You know, people with
access. And that's why it's white.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. It's a very thing. And then fentanyl. Now it's like the street thing, which is also another, like, I don't know. I don't know who who predominantly has that? You know, I want to know the demographics of homeless people in like LA, like what races they are.
So do I. So do I.
Because when I drive in Tucson and everywhere else, I'm going to say my observation, empirical data only, it's been nothing but white people that I see begging on the corners.
Okay.
So it's like, this is it's a very interesting, if they say it's like a mental health, like homelessness is a mental health issue. If that's true, mental health should affect people demographically across the board, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you should see equal amount of the different races because, you know.
That's not true. Mental health, I mean, you have such a, I mean, okay, mental health is across the boards, but how people deal with it and the way families deal with it is, and how they end up falling through the cracks of society is different. So that's why, yeah,
because I feel like, you know, like white people do the frozen thing. It's like, hey, conceal, don't feel, hide your shit.
Hide it, but also they have enough money to keep sending that person to different institutions, fucking different rehabs, different programs. You know what I'm saying? Black people will try their best to keep you around, but then if you run off, then eventually we're just gonna go to where you are and check on you. You know what I'm saying? I've seen it happen.
Yeah, Mexican families. Like I said, I don't know a lot of them, but it's like they know it's there. They know that person, and their family warns you about that person. Like, hey, stay away from this person. He's going to be there.
Have you seen Encanto?
I have seen Encanto, yeah.
Bro, that we don't talk about Bruno, bro. That shit made me cry, dude. Now, that's supposed to be a Colombian movie, but every Latin America, like, owned it. And I think families in general should just own it. But, you know, there's a fucking one cousin that's around that's crazy, but he really has visions and he lives in the crawl space of the house, and they all just say, we don't talk about Bruno. They sing a song saying, oh, we don't talk about him, and he just like looks crazy as fuck. It's also played by John Leguizamo, perfect, you know.
Dude, like that's a person. So I like John Leguizamo as an actor. Mm-hmm. I like him as a stand-up, but I don't think he's as good as he is as an actor. I love him as an actor. He's great.
I don't look at him as a stand-up. I look at him as an entertainer.
That's, you know? Yeah, and that's the thing, too. So, like, well, like, you know, and I was so excited. Like, oh, I fell into that trap. Like, oh, he's funny in movies. He's going to be funny as a stand-up. And definitely was wrong with that. He's definitely
Yeah. So. People that put the time in and stand-up super hard and then go do other things, I think... I don't know. They're not always stronger. I'm not going to say that, but I just feel like the depth of their artistry is something else. I don't know how to explain it. Like Marc Maron, Maron going and acting.
I think it's because you constantly have one shot and it has to be funny on that one shot.
That doesn't mean that they succeed.
Well, no, I'm not saying that they succeed. I'm just saying like when a movie's funny, you don't know if that's the first take or the 50th take. You know what I'm saying?
I guess.
I feel like it's like, you know, like it's like, I mean, that's.
Oh, you mean in stand up, you only have one shot?
Yeah.
Okay. That could be a reason why.
And you entertain that crowd and you don't get like, you know, 50 takes to make the joke right. So I feel like, you also have, you performed it thousands of times in front of crowds instead of isolated. So you know where it's funny, why it's funny. You know what I'm saying?
But Marc Maron, I could imagine, and in stand-up, your shit gets taken differently in all different crowds. So, like, there's a crowd that super-duper loves you, then there's a crowd that's hard to work with, and you just have this tool bag to start getting everybody on your side. And I think people that's been doing it 25 years, 30 years, like Marc Maron, have fucking, like, got a deep-ass tool bag. And so it doesn't necessarily... Like, they just become such a professional in, like, oh, y'all didn't get that? I will circle back so you understand it. Or I will, whatever their tool bag is, you know? So, and that's what I mean by their artistry. Like,
it's almost like he's a teacher. He's going to, if it's not funny to you the first time, he's going to circle back around.
And or explain it different. Yeah. Yes, yes.
That's amazing.
I mean, he's fucking, yo. When I watch him on stage, dude, it's insane, bro.
I haven't seen anything from Marc Maron. I don't think he has anything on Netflix, right?
I don't think he has a special on Netflix, no.
Netflix has been my primary go-to for stand-up.
I'm sure it has. Dude, they have a festival going on right now. Netflix is a joke. It's fucking great. It's badass.
Yeah. John Mulaney
is doing at the Hollywood Bowl, I think the 7th, and Earthquake is opening for him.
Mm. John Mulaney is one of those comedians that I don't think I ever wanted to laugh at, but he is so pinpoint. He's good. When he does something like... No, you're good. He does this thing where he's talking about going to church and they change the word responses at the mm-hmm. Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
I fucking cried because I've been there. And even now I go to church. I'm like, man, I don't remember the new stuff. I had 20 years of indoctrination as a child to memorize these few lines. And now in my adulthood, I still struggle to try to remember the new responses. There's like a cheat card, and they've taken the cheat card away because you're supposed to go enough to memorize. I'm like, where's the new cheat card? And like, used to be this, now say this. I'm like, I still need the cheat card. Come on. I haven't learned it yet.
See, dude, he's phenomenal. And then Earthquake, you're aware of Earthquake?
I watched his special. I there's points in there that were extremely funny.
Okay, that's all you got to say. That's it. No. That's it. That's it. That's enough right there.
What's that? He was good.
Yeah, he's a beast, dude. But no, he only did 30 minutes, you know? It was what it was, but...
It was, right? His comedy special was an hour, right?
No, it was only 30 minutes.
That's what it felt like. I guess I didn't pay attention too much to the time, because like I said, I always put it on in the background. And I did notice one problem with it. He's very visual, which I didn't get. Like, I'd have to, like, rewind it because there'd be moments where people were laughing and, you know, like, where he's talking about he's in the doctor's office.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'd have to pause it and then go watch it to see it. And it was – that part was hilarious.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, the visual nature of it kind of
– Oh, threw you off because you probably weren't paying attention. You were, like, walking away and shit like that.
Yeah. Or... No, I had it in my headphones. I'm playing on my phone while I was doing dishes.
Right.
Yeah, So that to me is where is a person is an entertainer and absolutely funny versus like John Mulaney, where he just stands there and there's not really,
It's straight words.
Exactly. So you can ingest it differently. Like you have to watch Earthquake and it's hilarious. John Mulaney, you can listen to him and it's hilarious.
Yeah, that's also very true. So, My girl, she just did this thing called Surrounded. It's a show that's made by this guy named Mike Falzone. I'm saying these names because you will know Mike Falzone, and Netflix may do Surrounded on TV. So we'll see. But it's a show where it's in the improv, and they have seats. The seats are. They pretty much created it around. You're standing on the ground, and then they put the seats in a circle around you, and you can't do any material. You just crowd work the whole show. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So, and this is kicking off the Netflix is a Joke Festival. I watched my girl do it, and I saw some other friends go do it. Phenomenal, bro. The show is such a good idea. It's badass, and you see people have to just be funny, not like some shit that you brought. You got to kick it, ask a person what they do, and make something happen for her.
Yeah, just like what you said, that's what always impressed me with rap battles.
Yes, bro.
Like, where you have to, like sometimes it's like they go back into the past where it's like, oh, this person's from here. It's like, well, then you could have wrote that.
Exactly.
Like, talking about, like, their hat, what they're wearing, what they just said.
Yes.
That is, to me, if someone says something, and you take their words and turn it into another rap.
Yes.
I enjoy the craftsmanship more than I enjoy the burn.
Oh, dude. Like, Mike Falzone is so good at, like, just being right there funny and saying the perfect thing. He has this timing. I would like somebody that doesn't know him as well, but, like, what he does with work, like, his timing.
Does he have any specials out? Or
he doesn't have. You can follow him and you can see his podcast, but I don't think he has a special. Maybe he has like 30 minutes somewhere, but I don't think he's.
I might check on YouTube to see.
Oh, he's done. He's been a YouTuber for a very long time, so he definitely has stuff out there. Yeah,
good.
But
good.
Just a nice guy too. But like, he just straight up like does this thing with timing, and he does it there where he like says something and almost stops, like almost says it and doesn't, and then like finishes it with something that you didn't expect. And he's giving himself time, but he's also improvising. So it's like it's fire. And then watching other people, like watching some people, my girl has this way of connecting in a way that's personal to her, and then that person will be like, yes, because she's saying like an honest truth that's to her. And I honestly, I get afraid to do that because I'm more like, oh man, like I'm wasting these people time by telling them this story that makes it endearing to me. And so it's quiet in that moment, right? And so I'm thinking, oh shit, I'm losing them. But she'll go and tell a background story as to what happened with her dad and how it was when he was bowling and this and this. And then people will be like, that was how my dad was too. And then the whole crowd will explode, you know? So it's just like, this shit is good, dude. It's fun to watch other people do it, a whole bunch of, you know, other people that I know getting on. One dude, Brian Simpson, I don't know if you've seen him, but
Brian Simpson, I know.
He's a Marine too. I don't even know that. But he gets on and just says, hey, y'all two, you together? He's like, man, she's too hot for you, man. She's using you, bro. I don't know what for what, but she's using you. And the women in the crowd loved it for some reason. And he was like, right, I don't know, but then they looked at each other and like laughed. It was there were moments in there that are just so like, I can't believe that person just said that to that person. Like, what? So it was cool shit, man. And I think it's just it's an evolution, because we want to see more different things.
Yeah.
So it was cool as fuck, man.
You know, it's funny too though. Like, we talked about that, like about the guy and the girl thing. But here's another thing too. It's like, it's funny because it's like, if you see a couple together in the beginning and you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But like sometimes it's like the dude gets really big or the girl gets really big and you're like, oh man.
Yeah.
So you're like, why is this person with her? It's like, oh,
they weren't like that.
They fell in love 50 pounds ago. That makes sense.
Yes. Oh, that, I don't see that often, but I'm sure you see. Yes, you see that. How did this happen?
You used to see that all the time. Oh, the dependipotamuses.
Yes, yeah. Oh man. Oh man. Yes.
Yeah, where you see a guy that was forced to stay in shape for 8 years, and like they're both right out of high school, and that person just bloop, 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 gets bigger, bigger, bigger.
Fell apart. You know what? I don't see that often? Officers. Officers' wives stay tight.
You know? No. So I have a theory on this. So the first thing is we it's amazing. We're given the best thing ever, where we thrive in suffering or with hard work.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when you get an enlisted guy, 18, and his girlfriend, usually like 17 to 18, you know, they're both right out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
That person will go to the Marine Corps, and that other person will go, oh, I can't do anything because I have to go here with my husband. And it's a massive excuse right away. I can't do anything because I have to be here. It's like, well, you can still enroll in school. You can still take classes.
There's online class. Stop playing. Come on.
Yeah.
Get wherever he's at. There's a community, you know?
Exactly. So you're not driven in life. So you're purposeless. So you don't really thrive. And you use food as a coping mechanism or all these different things. And you just see him like blow up. Now, on the opposite side, most of the officers meet their spouses in college. And they've already achieved something and they're getting careers and they're doing these things versus like working at like Subway or, you know what I'm saying? That's another sad thing too. A lot of these spouses, they'll get a job at Subway or whatever to help pay the bills because the you know, an E1 through E3 BAH doesn't really cover anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one sticking point about the military is your first 10 years, you don't really make much money.
Yeah.
After 10 years and, you know, you're able to make a career out of it, it's much better. But the first 10 years is a rough road. It's better to be poor single than it is to be
single
poor together.
Single as hell, just stay in a barracks, stack your bread.
Yeah. Jesus.
And that's what a fucking all the staff will say to you. But they're like, I fucking hate field day. I mean, me too. I did too. What are we talking about? I hated this shit. So, fuck, man. It's real shit.
Yeah. And, you know, I hate this because obviously the generation is always worse for them. Keep trying to make the life in the barracks better and better and better. But, man, back in like 2002, 2003, field days were like, you can make them take out everything in the and then mop and everything. And I put everything back in the stuff. So on the catwalk, you just have nothing but furniture. It's crazy.
That's torture.
Yeah. So, all that's gone away. And I was lucky, like, you know, people talk about, like, the junk on the bunk. They used to make people do their field day formation in conjunction with junk on the bunk. which is having all your stuff folded and put together, you know, in a sense, it was kind of, I have a, you know, there's duplicity on this. It is torture, but it also makes people very, very attention to detail oriented.
And also you are, you're mindful of it. It doesn't just become stuff in your wall locker. You probably put, you learn to put it in a position. You, it makes you organized on accident.
Yes.
Let me just keep it there so I don't have to do this shit from scratch every fucking week because I'm ready for you punk bitches. You know?
Yes. It forced you to make sure you can, like now, I think that was one of the things too. Like later on, like my military career, I would see people just take all their uniforms and shove it in their closet. Like, what the fuck? Like, mm-hmm. like if we would have a drunk on the bunk,
that shit would be,
yeah. And it was like, it would look at your wall lockers and you have to have the uniforms in the correct order. It made you not use your stuff too. So there's also a bad side to it.
You like, just had stuff that you just sat in there ready.
Yeah. And it's like, well, it's already this way just in case this happens. Yeah. So there's good and bad to it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure there was money wasted. You had double what you needed. What's going on? What you needed just being prepared.
That's right. Yeah. So it's, I don't know. So I feel like there's purpose, but there's also, you have to make the worst person be able to do it. So sometimes it's overkill.
A guy that's not a piece of shit, he's now having to pick up for the weakest trash. But also, there's only so much that needs to be completed. So at some point, it's simple for him because he just has his shit together that well.
Well, and it also ingrains habits too. Like right, like even me, like I can take a picture of like my closet with the uniforms in it. I still have like a plastic sheet over every piece of uniform, not plastic, but like a trash bag basically. And like to keep the dust off of it, because that's another thing too, like dust builds on clothes. So you're like, okay, that's, you know, something that you learn like after like 6 months of not touching your wall locker closet. And it's like, why is there dust on your uniform? It's like, I don't know. I've never touched it. So it's like, you know what I'm saying? There's all these different things. It's like the air conditioner blows dust. That's what's going on. So yeah. It's a lot of little things, but I still have these habits to this day. I like hanging up all my clothes.
You've been abused, man.
what I'm trying to say is I have trauma.
It's not your fault.
No, I mean I'm thankful for the habits because it's like, you know, once you get married, it's like, oh yeah, I hang my clothes, I fold my clothes, and it's things that your spouse is going to be appreciative of.
Mm-hmm.
Versus being like, you know, like coming out of high school and like, oh, my mom does my clothes for me. So now that you're my wife, I expect you to do my clothes. It's like, no, you're going to be a competent human being and do your own stuff.
Right.
So I think it allows you to grow as a human being. And yeah, I think, like I said, that trauma is important. Trauma is necessary for growth.
I mean, maybe that's not the exact way they healthily want you to put it, but yes. I do think
suffering
is, there's a purpose to suffering. That's a better way to say it. Trauma, it can be so degenerative, but blah blah blah. I know what the fuck you meant by that.
Yeah, if you grow a tree indoors and never expose it to wind, it won't have roots that are strong enough to hold up outside. So, like, I look at like a tree as a person. If you coddle a child, they won't be able to survive in nature. You need a certain amount of, I don't want to say like trauma, but like as a parent, you can't always be like, hey, you did great. You did this. Like, no, you messed up. You need to fix this.
Resistance is required for strength is also another way you could say that, you know? But I hear what you're saying.
You're right. you in the woke world, what I'm saying is very terrible, even though in the unwoke world, it's meaning the same thing.
Because my dad used to punch me in the face. Now, I'm good for corporate America, you know.
I wouldn't say that.
No, my dad never punched me in the face. I'm just saying that's what somebody could say, you know.
No. There is a level to, there's a good and a bad to everything.
Right.
That's like, you know, like that's the other thing too. Like people are like, oh, you need to, you know, socialize your son because it's healthy for him. I'm like, well, agree to disagree. Like you don't. And like every
socialize with who, you know,
exactly
these shitty public school kids,
exactly,
or what, like, you know,
and that's what, like, people are like, well, if you, you know, like, you know, if you there's a good and bad to everything except for like socialization for kids. Like oh, they need to, or like, you know, socializing for dogs. Like if you take a puppy and you throw it into like a den of like angry, starving dogs and it's going to beat the shit out of this puppy all the time. Yeah, you're like, that's bad. But we
that
do
puppy
that
will
same,
not survive.
Exactly. But we do the same things in public school sometimes. We put these this innocent and it's like, oh, we expect them not to be like these. We want you to go to school, but not be this bad kid. But we're going to put you in all in the worst environment where you have to thrive in that sort of way. Like, for example, I think of juvenile detention like that. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's like we have a ridiculous amount of data that shows that kids who go into juvenile detention don't come out better.
Oh, shit. Yeah, yeah.
But yet we still have juvenile detention and it hasn't evolved or changed or anything like that. And it's like, we got to learn that it's wrong, right? Like at a certain point, same with prison. We have so many data points, right? And we're like, nope, prisons works. Send them to jail. Even society wants people to go. Even us, when we're talking about the Tindler Swindler, right? We're like, he should go to jail. And I think it was Danny's like, well, or maybe it was you. You're like, well, that makes us need to look at how we do jail. I was like, God damn it, you're right. And I was like, fuck. You know, it's one of those moments where it's like we're talking and you just say something and I just feel like, oh. But yeah, we do need to look at a lot of different things. You know, I wanted to bring this up to you. I was listening to, I want to say it was the Jon Stewart podcast, right?
Okay.
And me and you had been talking about how we, as science only talks about the Western scientists. It doesn't matter who you are. The Western scientists are going to be the one that they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
There was like, it was like weird or something like that. That was a term where it's like Western something developed countries or man, I can't even think what it was, but I wanted to bring it up. But there's actually a definition where it says that we don't trust anybody but Western, basically countries that were colonized. We trust their influence, and countries that weren't colonized by Europe, we don't trust their influence.
Okay.
In medical communities. And it's crazy because it's like you look at like countries like, you know, like in Asia or whatever, they don't have SIDS like we do, but we're like, yep, we know exactly what to do with babies. And it's like, do we? Like, how are we? How is a developed country the only ones that has the prevalence of SIDS like we do? And that SIDS is sudden infant death syndrome.
Uh huh.
Uh huh. So
they don't have that in other countries, or they just don't have prevalence of it. Like
they don't have the prevalence that we do.
Uh huh. But I mean, they also have a less population, though too. So the numbers are going to be less.
Well, prevalence would be, yeah.
It would be per capita of their country.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So not actually, I don't know if prevalence would be per capita or if it's more like or if it's like a percentage thing.
It would get to 1 to 0 at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the percentage is what I should say, the percentage of it happening, which would be like per capita, mm-hmm. is higher in America. And it makes me wonder, like, is it the detergents? Is it
there's a bunch of diseases though that we have that we say are not the underdeveloped countries are not dealing with. I mean, there's diseases that they have too, yeah. but there's some that only we have, and so obviously it's environmental.
Yeah.
So it's like, what are you're having to deal with shit that you only have because of the developedness. Sorry, the Wi-Fi, yeah. the detergent, the products, the access to plastics, the weird ass water, all of that, you know.
And the way we raise the kids. I remember my wife was telling me about this Russian study where they took a bunch of babies and nobody held them, right? They just gave them the bottle, burped them, changed them, minimal contact is possible. Now I'm gonna tell you this right now. I cried when she told me this because I'm a big emotional bitch, but she's like, the babies started dying.
Oh my God.
And I was like, and I started crying. She's like, what's wrong? I was like,
who told you this? Your wife?
My wife. I was like, they all died with never knowing love. Like, that's the fucking saddest thing I've ever heard.
They
couldn't
have done that to some fucking squirrels, man.
Yeah. And I was like, even like a little meth baby gets held by the, you know, the mom before it's like placed in a dumpster. I'm like, at least they felt a little love. You know what I'm saying? And to me, it's wild that like these babies all die with never feeling any ounce of love. They were all test subjects. And I fucking cried. Anyways, but
they had to be screaming and crying the whole time. They had to start seeing signs of like, okay, guys, are we still gonna do this? I wanna hold this baby. I would have been late night at the lab, like, I'm going to stay at Salo, and just been holding the fuck out of the babies, dude, all night. Like, I would have failed that, bro.
Well, and then it's like, it's only in, like, Western society where it's like, hey, we got that baby has to self-soothe. Your baby needs to learn to self-soothe.
I've heard this, like, oil. Wait, so there's a whole thing of, like, if your baby's crying, don't touch it. Leave it in there and don't look at it. Yes. I've heard this.
So it's like, it makes me think of, like, okay, you got the Russian babies that were never held. They couldn't self-soothe, so they died. Then you also got, like, got bedtime, 8 p.m., and no matter what your day was, kiddo, let me lay you here. And then they're also, like, you know, they're having to self-soothe, and then they also die. And there's no predominant cause of SIDS, but it's like we have a far extreme and a less extreme. And, like, you don't think that they might be interrelated?
That, like, the fact that you're putting your kid to sleep at 8 o'clock, the sun might not even be all the way down.
Yeah.
But it's in a room by itself while here's the rest of the world going on, and it's full of energy.
And it's supposed to be convenient for your schedule.
Yeah. So you can fucking finally have a drink.
Exactly. And it's like, to me, it's like, why do we think that American psychology is the fucking pinnacle of psychology, right? Because we feel like we have the most empathy. It's like, if we feel that, like, self-soothing to me is just not, it's not criminal. It's just cruel, though. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, and parents are like, talk about the most overwhelmed people in society. We don't know what the fuck we're doing. Like, when you first have a kid and you first hold it there, every father is fucking terrified.
I imagine.
Like, you're like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to hold. I'm scared. Oh, God. Oh, poop. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know. But help me. Help me. It's like, you know what I'm saying? And I feel like they're a vulnerable population that psychologists have fucking just run rampant through with fucking bad ideas.
Right.
So, and it's like, oh, well, have you read this book? Have you read parenting books? It's like, why? Why?
So I can be told this philosophy by this person that has been signed off by other fucks. It's probably a sicko, or maybe doesn't even have kids.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. Like, this is the one biggest thing I have against psychology. It's like they always talk about Freud as the father of psychology, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you know, we got to talk about Freud. Freud was a fucking pervert and a weirdo.
Yes.
Everything he said, like even his contemporaries, like Carl Jung, like he's like going, "Hey, man, I like what you're doing, but you're a fucking weirdo. I don't think anything you're saying is right." And he immediately put out counter to what he said. Immediate.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, he was the first one to do it, so he's the best. It's like, no, he isn't. He had a lot of, he talked about a lot of things that I'm pretty sure were out there, right? That was already in the ether. And he just was the first one to annotate everything and kind of collect all these things together.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, he's the father of it. It's like, but you know, when we talk about other aspects, we don't talk about the, like, you know, like when you talk about like aviation, right? And you learn how to fly. We don't go into hours about the Wright brothers.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, that might be a footnote. Like, yeah, they were the first to fly, but most of the time you don't even need to know that because you just need to know how to fly your aircraft, right?
No. Yes.
So I think of it, I think of psychology as one of those things where it's just like, it's just sucking its own dick all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything we've done is so important, and you're fucking lucky to have psychologists like us.
Right.
And you're welcome for, you know, thank you for my service type thing. That's what I feel about the way psychology is, about all the people who've ever contributed to psychology. And it's just crazy. Like, even like, I think about it, like, I don't know why I remember this. There was a psychologist, her name was Horny, last name Horny. And for some reason, I always remember that name because she had to contradict penis envy, which is still pervasive.
I think that was what's the name's daughter.
Who's?
The father.
Freud?
Yes.
I think it was Freud's Horny.
Daughter. Yes. Yeah,
she had to counteract penis envy, and it became pervasive.
So she called it vagina envy or some shit like that. Am I wrong with that?
No, she just says it doesn't exist. There's no reason for a woman to have envy of a man's penis.
I wonder how.
Right.
Like we don't have vagina envy because why would we be envious of it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, it's such a weird thing. Like, all of these psychology terms that came up, and it's like, ugh. But we accept these things, and we accept it from people who have all these mental problems, and then they write a book, and they're like, yep, they know what they're talking about. I got to have my baby self-soothe. And it's like, you know, like, it's crazy to me because, like, I can hold my son or my daughters, and, you know, like, for 15 minutes, they go to sleep, and I lay them down. Why is that such a, like, a wrong thing to do? And then they go to sleep happy, and they wake up happy versus, like, panicked.
Yeah. I remember I knew somebody that was a nanny, and they would talk about letting the kids self-soothe when the parents weren't there, and that the kids would eventually deal with whatever their emotions were, but then the parents would come home and be parents, right, and hug them and hold them and shit, right? And she was just like, you know, they're just making them so they cry longer type shit. And I'm like, I mean, like, you don't have kids right now, so maybe you feel like that's easy because you're so separated from it and you just think you're being a thing. But once you have kids, are you going to be able to just set them down? Because you're connected to that being, so it's going to be so much harder for you to just let a part of you scream in the other room, you know? Well,
and that's the thing, too. Like, so often you're like, oh, they better self-soothe. You don't, if you're ignoring them completely, like, maybe you lay them down and then they took a shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
they're crying because they have a full diaper and they don't want to go to sleep and shit.
Yeah.
It's like, but like, nope, he's got to self-soothe. Got to learn how to take care of it. It's not a baby's
cry. So many different reasons.
Sometimes it's just because it's, you know, like they want something, like or like the parent to hold them, or they don't want to go to sleep. They'll cry because they're tight and they don't want to sleep. There's that. And I agree with that. But there's a myriad of other things. They might still be hungry.
Yeah.
And they're trying to tell you, hey, I'm fucking hungry. Please feed me.
Right.
And there's so much.
That's
weirdness.
Their only communication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're ignoring it at specific times. So it's like, what, you know, like if you're ignoring it, then like what is their recourse when you don't, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you make a quieter baby, but is it better? You know, they don't want to communicate with you and all these different things. And I don't know. I think we accept a lot.
You think babies remember when you ignored them when they start? If you stopped at like 5 or 7 because they can start talking, and
yes.
Do you think they remember when they were infants?
They don't
on an emotional level.
I don't think remembering is what they do. I think it's the epigenetics, not eugenics. I believe that's what Bill Gates likes, where he wants to kill half the population.
Hilarious. Yeah.
But epigenetics, basically, the way your parents treat you as a baby, it develops your genetics.
Mm-hmm.
So, like these babies that have to self-soothe, it changes the way they're gonna develop genetically. Mm. So everything you do to your child. Which is like, it's like that's why types of emotional patterns are passed on to your children, because, you know, as a parent, you do some of the same similar things that your parents do. So your child's going to develop their genetics the same way you do. So like, that's why I definitely believe in like breaking the cycles of like different things like discipline. Like I got the belt, sticks, shoes, cords,
spoons.
Yeah. So. You know, like, you know, we'd get hit so hard, like our backs would like have welts that would, they would get bigger, and then they split.
Uh-huh.
So the welts would be so bad that like you would hope that they wouldn't split, because then they would hurt even worse.
Oh, sheesh.
So, you know, I grew up with that, where like if you never got hit with a belt so bad that it's going to, you knew even as a child, like your butt was going to split. You were going to have like scabs and like lines on your butt. That's the type of way I had. And that wasn't like anything that I blame my parents for, because they were a generation that was beat even harder than us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, listen to my parents' stories and my uncles and my aunts and what, you know, like talking about the time, like they're, you know, like
they my got knocked father's unconscious father. Or some shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My father's father used fists, and my dad's like, I don't use fists. So like, he took it.
He felt good. He felt better because an open hand.
Exactly, or the belt.
Yeah.
And I think that we are moving that way, but I also don't think that every move like is like, oh well, we shouldn't do discipline at all. Anyway, so that, man, we got really deep into psychology, and we got super serious. I thought, felt like this one was going to be after the Post Malone roast, I thought this was going to be the hilarious episode.
No, we did goof around, but we got in there.
Yeah, it got dark real quick, so let's lighten it up. Let's talk about Ukraine. Hilarious. No, we were talking yesterday, and I did want to bring this up. It's I don't want to really get into Ukraine, but I want to talk about the cycle of people in America, and it's the same people. I have a friend who is a college professor, right? And many years ago, I mean, it doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but he was over there like, punch a Nazi. We need to punch Nazis in the face. And there was all these things about like people who voted for Trump, which to equate everybody who voted for Trump, if you think half of the country is a Nazi, you're already demented, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We can go into this. So now we go into the lockdown, Joe Biden's lockdown. Wear a mask, get the shot. Like they're yelling at people, like don't go outside. Like, I don't know why you're outside, you fucking, you piece of shit and all these different things. So it's the same people. They're going from punch a Nazi to don't go outside. And then the Ukraine thing pops off and these exact same people. And I dare you to go look at your friend's post, the people who are asking you to go to Ukraine. You go back in the timeline, you'll see that they're the ones that told you need to wear a mask and we're mad about people not wearing a mask.
You know, it's funny. Some of them are just using social media for the first time now, though, too. The Ukraine kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so, now, I mean, well, I'm just saying now these people who were scared of the boogeyman COVID want us to go to war. Actually, they don't. Us is the wrong thing.
Right.
They want you to go to war. They want someone else to go to war.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They want someone else to be forced to go to war. They want Biden to tell other people's kids to go to war, but they don't want to go to war.
Right.
It's a very interesting dynamic, and they feel like they're doing good by saying we should go to war. And it's like, I don't know. I've been enough times. I think you should go to war.
Exactly.
If you want to go to war, fucking enlist. It's so fucking easy.
But I also, I mean, like, they're not simply saying go to war. They're saying that we should be going and helping. We should be going and helping Ukraine with Russia. But I don't think they know what that help means, you know? That help does mean, you know, conflict, right? They're not really understanding what that means. They're thinking that some nice guy that doesn't have guns is going to go over there and talk. Like, that's a resource. That's not. Like, jump into some shit, and I don't think we really I'm not even smart enough to talk about what that means, you know?
Yeah. So what you're saying is some of these people think that some good dude's gonna go over there like, hey, my name is Jim, pronouns
moderate.
He, him.
Yes, exactly.
Pronouns he, him, and I don't think what you're doing is correct over here.
Exactly.
And
I get shot down immediately.
You know what makes me laugh too is when people get mad about seeing somebody put their pronouns up. Like, it doesn't, that to me is the least bothersome thing there is.
Yeah.
That's funny to me. I don't know. And it's the opposite side of the spectrum than what I'm just talking about. But if someone puts up their pronouns as like he, him, or she, her, how does that
I think there is a space for that. I think there's a space for that. I could see me, I mean, I don't put them on my social media, but I can see me working at a job and then they make everybody introduce themselves and say their pronouns. I could see that. So, I mean, hey, whatever it is, I can see that for certain spaces coming, you know. I can see me working at a job and then, and what are your pronouns, you know? And I need to be, say it, you know, instead of being like, obviously, I'm what I am, you know. That's me being out of pocket for that situation. So there's no reason to be pissed on that. And they're in their world. If they're on social media, they're in their pocket of the internet. You know what I'm saying? So they probably presenting themselves to the people that are around them. So yeah, I don't know why people get mad about that. But when they start saying other shit, like, you know, Vista Visti, you know, or whatever is their weird little.
Yeah. At that point,
Pony it's like, Ponai. It's like, okay, are you serious? Are you fighting the gender law, man? You know,
the gender law, man.
That's really the man. I mean, that guy.
But I love the fact that you use gender law, man, because it's funny because it's like there's thousands of genders, but the man is is the one. But I know you're using it in the classical sense as the man,
right?
You know, big brother. I love it. That's funny though.
Wow,
it was just such
big
a,
brother, so, the man, them. It's crazy that we use all.
No, yeah, we can't use they them though. That's taken.
Well, when they say they, you know, they just want us, man. No, there's no point to what I'm saying right now.
Well, yeah, I know that's funny though. Yeah. Anyways, I was just saying that it's crazy. That's like, we like, it's such like social media bipolarism of like where you're at different things. Like, we need to be, you know, going over there and helping these Ukrainians. It's like, oh, Afghanistan, those people don't need our help. You know, after 20 years, they should be, you know, better by now. It's like, that's so crazy. It's weird that we think in these we have these thoughts that some populations should fix themselves and some need help. And both sides, you know, Democrat, Republican, have different ideas who should be able to help themselves and who shouldn't. So for example, Afghanistan, a third world underdeveloped nation, they can help themselves against the rebel force. However, Ukrainian, which is a developed nation, part of the European Union, who has all these allies, they can't help themselves against Russia. So weird. Who we
I don't
have
think,
empathy for.
I don't. When we left, I don't think that the left's idea was that they wanted us to leave. They. That's just what Biden decided. But they were. Whoa! It's not ready for them to leave. You know, that's but true. They also that's, were like, well, we've been in that country forever too. People didn't know how to feel about that shit.
I'm sorry. And when I say the left, I mean the political left. The country who believes
media.
In
right.
Yeah, I meant the politicians the politicians at DC left. I should say politician left versus like country left.
No, that's such a big distinction. That is huge.
Yeah. Yeah, the politician left, like, we did it. We won. It was a big win for us, the Democratic side. We got out of Afghanistan. And it's like, and, you know, their words about what had happened. I will say the entire country showed empathy for Afghanistan, especially, you know, with those people falling off the plane, which, you know, I felt bad for them, but it's like, come on. This isn't a cartoon. You can't hold on to a plane. You know this.
Right.
I mean, I felt bad because it's like what did you think was going to happen? Like, you know, at 5 feet, let go.
Right.
But at 200 feet, I mean, you're in it for the long haul.
Oh, those people on those wings. I mean, that just the longer that they stayed on there, I realized how fucked up their country was.
Like, yes.
The fact that at 300 feet, y'all were still sitting on. It's bad over there.
My question is like, you know, like, did some of them actually think too? But they're like, okay, if I drop at 20 feet, I'm paralyzed.
And
if I wait to 500 feet, it's no longer my problem.
I don't think the dudes thought that all the way through. I think they really thought that they could hang on. I'm sure there was a guy way longer than he should have. And they landed, and he was on there. You think there was guys that made it? Let's talk about the guy that made it all the way to the next country, dude.
Oh my god, that dude is a hero. But I don't think they make it. Well, it depends on the country they're going to, because the closer the country, the less altitude it's going to get. But dude, that altitude, like you're talking like
30,000 feet, 15,000.
You're not going to be breathing. You're done. No, I don't think anybody made it. No, it's sad. It's sad.
No, I don't feel bad for them. Those are decisions.
Well, let me ask you a question then. On the same aspect, do you feel bad for the people who protested in the road and a semi truck barreled into them?
Wait. This was in
America.
America.
During the Black Lives Matter protests. I don't even want to say those were Black Lives Matter protests. I think there was a bunch of different protests that used that same. I don't want to just limit it to that. I think there was the DACA stuff as well.
Yo, that's such a different thing because that's such a different thing because these are people that are super poor and that just like are looking at this superpower come over and, you know, possibly take them away and did take some people away. So that's one thing. And then you're looking at people that are in a fully developed country. And then here comes this driver of a truck. Who probably is driving a load from some corporation. Like, there's so many other things,
and,
right?
And a lot of those truck drivers got pulled out of their trucks and beaten.
See, so they're also, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Well, that part wasn't covered. So you could see that a lot of there were certain drivers that got pulled out of the truck. And a sad part about it is very underreported.
These are by Antifa people type shit, huh?
Yes. And Antifa people, to me, are opportunistic. They're the worst type of ally. They're opportunistic.
They're not an ally. They're anarchists.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Agreed.
So they're just, they are just like, I hate both sides and I want to stomp some shit out, really. And I look like one of the sides, but I'm ready to fuck shit up no matter what, you know? Yes. So, I mean, they're numbers to your cause, but they don't give a fuck.
And we're like, and that's a sad part too, because a lot of the causes is like, oh, you know, like you look at a peaceful protest and, you know, and a peaceful means nobody's injured and no fights. Like, that's the part that bothers me.
No personal damage, no property damage, nothing. Yeah.
Exactly. And the cops can arrest any antagonist that's like, hey, I'm going to beat the shit out of this protester because I don't like what they're saying, which is also fucking stupid. Like, those people, if there's a protest, and I mean, like, the rallying and protests and all these different things, they're generally scheduled. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's not even like an anarchist type thing. Like, that's part of our thing, is we have the right to protest.
Yeah.
And that's part of our constitution. So
yes,
people getting mad at some people for protesting. Yeah. Oh, I got to tell you this really funny. I went to a close up in high school. It was a program to bring like Wyoming or a bunch of kids to DC to talk to their legislatures. I had to do all kinds of dumb stuff for it. Like, run concession stands and paint fences and all these things to earn money, right?
Okay.
And then I got in trouble by the sponsor there because I took part in a protest. I didn't think it was a real protest. I thought it was hilarious. I grabbed one of the signs and it was save the skin, don't hurt babies. And it was like stop mandatory circumcision.
Okay. All right.
And I was
That's
over there
hilarious.
Holding signs and like had some of my pictures of friends take pictures. And it's like, hey, one of the aspects of close up is you are not allowed to participate in protesting. I was like,
that's a constitutional right.
I was like, I didn't read the rules. But yeah, I got a little counseling. But I was like, it really was a part of the protest. I just wanted somebody to take a picture of me with a penis sign. I thought it was hilarious.
Save the skin. But yeah, if a creep comes, I'd be like, no, I got all the skins. Like a guy with a bucket of foreskins.
Oh, Jesus. It's a rabbi.
Yes. They're like dipped in vinegar. They're seasoned. They're sun dried.
Let's talk about, you know, like certain things. Like, you can't go to anybody in America, right, and get like a medical thing done to you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I can't go to an unskilled person to get an immunization. They have to, you know, they have to be trained. But a rabbi can just cut off foreskin still in this day and age.
And do a whole procedure. It's insane.
A whole
also,
procedure.
There are still people in the Catholic community that fucking kiss the baby's dick. Am I wrong about that?
Yes. I'm just going to go ahead and say yes. That's a wrong thing. I've never heard about
kissing
the baby's dick.
Oh, no, that's Judaism. Sorry. That's Judaism. Sorry. They kiss. They suck some. They
not
suck
my religion.
The blood. Oh, they cut the. Sorry. They cut the. Sorry. Katrina is calling me out before she's going to live her dreams. And I'm talking shit about baby dicks. She just wants to get out and do something. But she's like, it's Judaism and it's after they do the circumcision, they suck the blood.
That's fucking, I mean, come on now. How is that loud?
But we don't, to its whatever you want to call it.
Freedom of religion.
No. Yes, freedom of religion. But that is freedom of religion, but I'm saying the Catholic priests are the ones that have been told that, fuck, you know, the molesting shit's happening.
Yeah,
you know?
But the molesting isn't allowed. What you're saying is a thing that's like, oh yeah, this is what we do.
That's totally fine.
But
yes.
How I'm just saying, medically, how are we allowing these people to do a medical procedure?
It's insanity.
I mean, that's like at that point, I can claim a religion. Like, I feel like all
are
the
there,
doctors.
I wonder if Jewish dudes' dicks are fucked up. That whole thing about them being their dicks being small is probably because they got some inches cut off, bro. Early on in the skin, they just got rid of too much skin.
Yeah, you know, they're not out there like a doctor, like using all kinds of sterile equipment.
No.
They're like, they're doing it in somebody's living room with like, well, they're cooking food and that's in the air. And yeah, it's,
they got fucking olive oil on their fingers.
Why olive oil?
Because it's fucking the top of the hummus. No, just like, I don't know why. That's racist.
It's not the top of the hummus.
Yeah, there's a little bit of olive oil. When you fucking scrape, when you do fucking, what's the name? They have a little bit of olive oil in there sometimes. Or somebody will put, olive oil in hummus.
No, no, no. That's just, I mean, that might be true. Hummus, but hummus is just garbanzo beans.
I know, but I'm saying in some of them, they put a little bit of olive oil in it. Saying at the house, they do that. I mean, at some places.
Like, yeah, I think, no, there's some, yeah, you're right. I think there is olive oil. You're right. But that's funny, though, that you're like, that's the
first thing. Or there's hummus still. Fuck it. There's hummus in the kid's dick. Who cares?
You know,
whatever.
You know what? The funniest thing is, I don't immediately think of hummus as a Jewish food. I think of it as an Arab food. The first thing that comes to my mind is kosher pickles. I don't know why.
But I feel like I love Jewish food, and I love Mediterranean food. If I'm talking shit, I love it. Dude, I don't give a fuck. It's just delicious.
I do too. One of my favorite places is Phoenix. It's called Chompy's. It's a Jewish deli, and it's also / a diner. Oh my goodness, they got some great food.
Dude, Green Blatt's in LA. It just closed down. It's so sad, but Green Blatt's has a double decker fucking sandwich. It's a Jewish deli. It's right above the Laugh Factory. They have a number 5. It is a fucking half pastrami, half corned beef with fucking Russian dressing and fucking sauerkraut on it. Perfect sandwich, bro. It goes bread, corned beef, bread, pastrami, fucking, I think it's provolone, and then fucking sauerkraut and Russian dressing on all the breads. Oh my God, dude. This, and they have it at Cantor's. They have it at, bro, this sandwich is fucking perfect. And I can only get it twice a year. I can't eat that thing. It's fucking flawless.
That sounds amazing. You know, I don't know where this comes from. A Reuben sandwich on a pumpernickel.
Yes.
Like, and
I think it's rye. I think they use rye, but.
Oh, rye or pumpernickel. Uh-huh. Yeah, rye's good. And the sauerkraut. And like a lot of times they try to mess with you and like put like roast beef or pastrami, but like if they did like the, I want to say it's corned beef hash.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, dude, it's fucking flawless. It's a beautiful sandwich. She ignored me. That's great.
All right. Well, you wanna go ahead and end this? We've been talking for a bit.
Yeah, man. This has been motherfucking redeeming qualities with Fez and Mark. It's been badass. I forgot. I was going to say I'm a philosophy for some reason. This has been Redeeming Qualities, a podcast for not how men speak, but how friends speak. I've been Mark this whole time.
And I'm Fez, and if you want to learn more about baby dicks, tune in next week.
Yeah. This has been great, dude. We went like silly, super mature, fucking terrible. It was great.
Yes. I love it. Yeah, we you know, once we're getting awful, it's like when a child's ready to sleep, they just get worse and worse and worse. That's how we know it's the end.
Yes.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
All right, bro. Peace, man.
Peace.